This is Foolish Adventure, episode 26, Product Creation, part 2. Welcome to another episode of Foolish Adventure. I'm Izzy Hyman, and I'm here with me amigo, Tim Conley.
What's up?
Hello, what's up, Izzy? Tim. All right, so this is part 2 of our product creation series. We didn't realize it was going to be a series. We thought we'd cover product creation in one episode, but what were we thinking? I don't know why we're even thinking that. There's so much to talk about. So where are we picking up now, Tim?
Okay.
What do you want to talk about?
We were going to cover like the nuts and bolts of doing, because we really killed the whole ebook one in the last episode. So we were kind of going to do that with audio and video, and then we got into talking off air about making sure you're going to make money from your product. So there's a couple of ways to do that, and we're also wanting to talk about the how to get other people involved in your product creation. So I guess we could call it like rapid product creation, and how to do those things. So I think that's where we should pick up.
So Tim, how do you make sure you're going to make, well, first of all, there's never any guarantees. You're not really going to make total sure that you make money unless you get the money up front.
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about that. What do you mean?
So the two meanings that I have here is one, I'm alluding to charging before you ever make the product. There's, you know, getting pre-sales before the product's ever created. And you have to be careful with that because...
What do you have to be careful about?
Because you cannot truly sell something that does not already exist. That's a no-no. But whenever you see something where it's going to take like 4 to 6 weeks for delivery, that's technically somebody has sold you a manufactured product and it's going to take a while before you get it, because it doesn't take 4 to 6 weeks to ship anything around the world anymore.
I wonder what the distinction is, because I buy a year's worth of a subscription to a magazine before they've ever been made.
Right. And so that's kind of what I'm talking about, is that we're creating content after it's been sold. So somebody has paid for that, and then which they're also paying for the delivery with that pre-sale, right? And you can pre-order a book, right?
Sure.
So like a brand new,
you can pre-order a movie, you can pre-order a video game,
right? So there are ways that you can charge without having the product already available, but you have to let people know it doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Because what used to happen, and I can't remember the technical term for it, but what manufacturers used to do is they would sell stuff, they would put an ad in a magazine, and they would sell something, and if they got enough orders...
Then they'd make it.
Then they would make it. Mm. And the government's like, that's not a good thing, right?
There's a little risk involved there to the consumer.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's what they're trying to do, is prevent those kind of scams. It's not really a scam, but it's...
It could be,
right?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't even exist. The product doesn't actually exist yet. But it still happens to a certain extent. Whenever you see something that has a long delivery time, then it probably isn't made yet.
So if there's somebody in the audience that knows the distinction, maybe you can leave a comment or let us know, call into the voicemail line and let us know what the distinction is. This is not something I've done, where I've sold something before I've made it, and that's kind of makes me nervous to do it. I wouldn't mind doing that if I was going to be holding a seminar, you know, or something like that. Of course, I'm going to charge ahead of time
right.
for that, even though the seminar hasn't happened yet.
And that's essentially what we're talking about, is providing content by selling it ahead of time, and you're going to deliver it on a particular date. Everybody already knows up front that it isn't made yet, so
sure.
so there's nothing being hidden.
Sure.
And it's done all the time, so I don't know the legalities of it, but I do know even major corporations do this.
Yeah.
So there's got to it probably is legal.
But just to be safe, let's say look into it.
Look into it
first.
Because I don't really know, but I just know that it's done all over the place.
Sure, sure.
So they might
know little things that we don't know about
right.
how to do that.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. In the internet marketing world, only a few people I know have even asked their attorneys about things related to that. The others just do this stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's the idea of getting paid ahead of time before you actually make the product. So that kind of guarantees you're going to get paid when you do, say, a teleseminar or a webinar where people are going to call in, or they're going to come to a particular software and be able to see your computer screen, and you're going to give them a presentation. They know they're paying for it. It's kind of like paying for attending a conference or a seminar. You pay ahead of time before you ever get there. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is what really should be happening in your business to actually have a solid business is to know that you have strong prospects. So either A, you've already sold something to a group of people, so then you know that they are buyers because they've already bought from you, and then you can sell them something else. But if you're just getting started, you don't have that, right?
Yeah.
So you need to do your market research and have a good idea that there's going to be buyers for this product.
Now, there's different types of buyers. There's buyers that have actually purchased something from you before. And then there's like the buyers who buy into you. Maybe they're part of your audience. So maybe you have an audience already, like if you have a podcast or if you have a blog where you have regular readers. So these are part of your audience. They're sort of like buyers, even though they haven't actually paid with money yet. I think if you have a big audience and you ask them, you say, hey, I'm thinking I'm going to make a product that's going to do this and this and this. It's probably going to sell for approximately this price range. If you'd be interested in buying that and want to be notified about it ahead of time, then go add yourself to this email list. I think you could look at that email list and say, I have a pretty good idea that there's a market here. Or if nobody goes to sign up, or hardly anybody goes to sign up, you could go, right. Probably not so much.
Right, yeah. We did that with the WordPress, the Foolish Guide to WordPress,
yes.
Where we created the email list just for that. It's like, okay, if you're interested in this, because we knew that there was a segment of our audience that were new to this whole online business thing, and then we knew that there were others who already had websites and stuff, so they weren't even going to be interested in it. So we didn't want to send out marketing messages to people who weren't even interested in something. So we said, hey, you know, go here, sign up for it, and then we'll keep you informed as the product is getting made. And we're able to get feedback from this. And even with that, we had around 500 people sign up for that email list. And we had about a 14% conversion somewhere in there from the amount of people on the list to the amount of people who actually bought. Because I knew, we got 500 people. That's not your that's not your buyers. You know, 500 people on a list is not 500 buyers. So you need to figure that you're probably going to sell out of that list
a fraction of them.
A
fraction of them will
actually
purchase
a small
the product.
Percentage.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard of people doing like 40 or 50%. In the past, I've never experienced that.
Yeah, I'll bet you I'll experience that with my next thing because I think the difference. If somebody has already paid for a product, and let's say it costs them, $50 for this product, and then you're going to turn around and sell them a supplementary product, and you've asked those buyers, you said, hey, I'm creating this other supplementary product. If you'd like to buy it when it comes out, then go add yourself to this list. Well, they've already paid $50 for that other product. I bet there's going to be a high percentage of them that pay $50 for this other product.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because they're already super qualified. Those are...
Right. So the number that get on that list are probably all buyers.
Yeah.
Or close to it.
Yep.
So in that case, you probably could see greater than 50% conversion rate off of that list.
I think it'd be interesting to see more than 100%, like 100% of the people on that list plus other people end up buying it.
That would be cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
You see how we just get off on these tangents?
All right.
What were we even talking about?
Well, about getting paid to make your product.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So let's put this in concrete terms. We were talking about, we're testing out using GoToWebinar. I've used it in the past for a few other clients, and Izzy and I just recently did a bonus call for the people who had purchased the Foolish Guide to WordPress. So we did this bonus coaching call, and we decided to use WordPress.
GoToWebinar.
GoToWebinar.
Yeah.
When, you know, I was saying we should just do a teleseminar because we're just going to be talking in an audio format, and we decided to test this out. So,
and I fell in love.
Yeah, yeah. And Izzy loves it, and he starts brainstorming like, you could make this kind of product and that kind of product. And I'm like, yes, you can, because
you've done it all before.
I've been a part of that.
Yeah.
So what you're doing is, so we're going to have GoToWebinar, and we could ask our audience, what would you like to know? A bit of information, like what would you want to know on would you want to know how to do X, or would you want to know how to do Y? And then if we get a bunch of people who say, we want to learn about Y, then we can say, okay, we're going to do this webinar on this particular date, and it's going to cover these particular topics and everything, and essentially sell this future product. And then you know, it's like, just sign up on this list and we'll notify you. And we'll send all the details out, you purchase, and then on that day, we do the webinar, and then you learn about that topic. That's essentially the whole process right there in creating a webinar without going into the nitty-gritty, like, what do you do in the webinar?
Yeah. Well, you know, I thought of a zillion different ways to use the webinar in my own business, and it's funny because I just can't believe it's another one of those things. I can't believe I didn't just start doing that a while ago, because it's exactly what I like to do. You know, I like to talk to my audience, right? I like to talk to my audience. I love doing things where I'm educating and you know, sort of like it's the teacher in me or whatever. I like to teach, I guess you might say. Well, the funny thing is that when I'm just recording into my computer, I try to remember that I'm going to have people watching this, but it's not as awesome as when you're doing it in front of a live audience. It doesn't have the same feeling. So this just goes right into, like right now, we're talking into microphones. We're not talking to people right now that are listening to us right now. So this is definitely removed. But if we had, you know, a couple thousand people listening to us as we're recording right now, that adds a whole new level of energy to this.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. Cause even though we know people are going to be listening to this particular episode in about maybe 2 weeks.
2 weeks, right? 3 weeks, something like that.
From the time we're recording, we try to put the energy that goes into trying to talk to a person.
Yeah.
So we
but
do
it's
that.
It's still not the same thing. It's still not quite the same thing as having 2,000 people listening to us right now.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So anyway,
we're talking about creating a webinar. One of the things we talked about off air is like, what are some of the pros and cons? And I wanted us to do a teleseminar, which is just using a telephone. You call into a number, and it's like, it's called a bridge line. You know, a bunch of people call into a single number, and we're just all talking on the phone. Well, you know, the people are listening on the phone and we're talking into a phone. And a webinar has particular advantages where you can show things. You can actually show how to do something, you know, physically, like, oh, here's the piece of software. You click here, you do this, you do that, and now you know how to do it because you've seen it done and you didn't just hear it. So that's one of its main advantages. The disadvantage being, well, you got to put a piece of software onto your computer. And that scares some people because they're scared they're going to get a virus or something, or just some technical issue comes up. It just doesn't work and it doesn't go live, or they're right on there. They go through it and their internet connection goes down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just all sorts of number of things can just be technical difficulties, even though it's come such a long way. 5 years ago doing webinars,
It was a totally different experience than now.
You only focused on people who were very tech savvy. Because
it was a complex thing.
Yeah, because no one was going to be on it. It just wasn't going to happen. But now things are a lot simpler. It's like you just click a button. It does it everything for you. And for the most part, people broadband's ubiquitous now. So it's not so bad. But with a teleseminar, a telephone, everybody knows how to use a telephone, and it's super simple. granted, landlines are disappearing, so you might get your call dropped on your cell phone. Whereas in the landlines, you just picked up your phone, dialed the number, and you listened.
Yep.
So it was super simple. And still today, it's a phone. Everyone knows how to use it. They don't have to download anything to use it. So if you don't have to show anything, a teleseminar would be the better way of creating a product that you're doing.
Okay. And you said you can have just the audio. You could have the audio recorded and sent to you for just a few dollars.
Yes.
I mean, they'll record it and send it to you. And so it's not going to be high quality audio by any means. It's going to sound like somebody recorded a telephone conversation, but the content is what's most important anyway.
Right. Yeah. It will definitely sound like a telephone call because
that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
And you can only get so much sound quality over a phone.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully with like digital phones now.
Yeah. It's a little better.
It's better than the old analog phones. So the quality is getting better, unless people are calling in on cell phones, and then you still have quality issues. The great thing about with the computers, and you can even do just straight audio off of a computer, gets a little more difficult, and you are limited by numbers. Then you can only have X number of people in most of the pieces of software out there that will allow you to do a conference call over, you know, voice over IP. So it's, you know, it's a lot smaller, but you know, it's still something you could technically do.
Very cool. So now what do you do with this? You have the ability to do it, and you basically sell ahead of time that you're going to be able to attend this call. Then you share the information, you prepare for it, and you share it, and then you record it, and then you can turn around and give the audio to people who paid to attend it, and then you can also sell the audio to people who weren't able to make it. So it becomes a digital product,
right? I can
go ahead
with. I was just like, I'm going to mention Joe again, and this is where I learned a lot of this kind of product creation was from Joe Polish. And one of the things that he did was he would sell a how-to course, not just a single call, but multiple calls. Where it was going to be over 6 weeks. It'd be a one call a week for 6 to 10 weeks or something. You don't want to go too far out because then you end up losing people along the way. So you have like this 6 week boot camp on how to do something.
Sure.
And Joe just uses the phone. He wouldn't do like the fancy, you know, webinar and stuff. He's done some of that since because we've worked on a couple of things before. But he would do these calls and record them and then have them transcribed. And I have to clarify, he sold access to getting this training before he ever did it.
Okay.
You start providing the content over a 6 week period.
It's recorded.
You're recording all of it. And as soon as each one's being finished recording, then you would send it out to be transcribed and edited into a readable format. Cause you know, we all have these ums and ahs and every little, you know, and
most people do, but I don't.
I know you're perfect.
just kidding.
So especially, yeah, with me, that'd be horrible reading my transcript.
Yeah.
So people have these verbal tics. You want to get rid of all those. So you have somebody not just transcribe it, but also edit it so it's clean and readable. And then you have a designer actually design the stuff that the ebook part of it. You put that information in. And then now you've packaged this whole thing up. And now you sell that course too.
Sure.
So and then you you provide that the recordings and the transcriptions and any forms supplementary material that you created for this course, you would then have that available also. And you would give that to the people who paid for the initial course to be there as it was being recorded. And then you put all that into a package and sell that to all the people who were not able to get onto the original course. And so now you have a product that you can sell into the future, built off of something that you sold before you ever made it.
This is awesome.
And then you can have a few other little nuances to that, where, oh gosh, I think I'm losing my train of thought.
The chances are you are losing your train of thought, because that's usually what happens around here, is that we lose our trains of thought.
Right, right.
In fact, that reminds me. I'm just kidding.
so you've sold this product and you've done it ahead of time. So you've gone through all this process, and now you're packaging everything up to sell to someone else at a later time.
You don't have to sell it, though. See, that's the thing, Tim, is it could be something that you have as a bonus that you give away. You know, that's something that I've definitely learned, is that when you have a bunch of products, you're in a huge advantage. You're in an advantageous position because when you run a promotion, you can do a few things at the same time. You can say, hey, during this 2-day period, you're going to save $10 off this product that's normally this price, but it's going to be $10 lower during this 2-day period. But in addition to that, I'm also going to throw in this other product that's normally $49, but I'm going to give it to you for free at no charge with a digital product. It's easier to do that. And I'm also going to throw in this or whatever, but it creates this huge value, this value. I just recently did a promotion where I basically had three products. One of them was my original product. I discounted a little bit. Then I threw in two different bonuses on top of that. So it was like $155 worth of product value. That's what it would have cost if they would have bought all three of my products separately just the day before. But I was able to bundle them up together, sell them for $55. And I had like an amazing response rate to this. People got really excited about it. They came out of the woodwork, you know, to buy this thing. It was great. And that I couldn't have done that if I didn't have those additional products on top of the one that I was selling. You need bonuses,
right?
So this type of thing sounds like it could be a good standalone product. It could be a good bonus product.
Yeah, so you need rapid creation of a variety of products.
Sure.
So you can make them very very distinct, saying, "Oh, we're only going to cover the small thing. It's going to be a 45-minute call or a 45-minute webinar. I'm just going to cover this one specific area."
Yep.
And then that could be a bonus to something. And I finally got back on track as to what I was thinking. Sorry, folks. one of the problems when you're selling a new product is tech support. Right? Because people have all these questions. And when you're creating a product, you can't think up everything people are going to ask you. And you can even do a survey and have people ask questions. But until they've seen used the bulk of your material, they're not going to have the right questions to ask you. And so when you create a product ahead of time like this, those beta testers, the people who went through the course before it became available to anyone else, and they paid to be there,
That's good. That's a good insight.
They're able to ask a bunch of questions, and then you're able to come back and respond to all those questions, so that when the new group comes in and buys this product from you, then all those questions are already answered. And it cuts down on your tech support, because you're not answering all these questions. It gives you this, you know, frequently asked question knowledge base that people can go to. And it also gives you the ability to foretell what kind of products you need to create in the near future. So that's where I was going and had lost it earlier, and I'm back.
Okay, well, I see the benefit of it now, that's for sure. I definitely see the benefit of it. Okay, so we're at 25 minutes. Do you want to start breaking into some of the other stuff, or should we? What do you want to do here, Tim?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so let's talk about it, because I think we need to move away from the ebook and the webinar, which is what we've talked about, or the teleseminar. That's a word I'm not used to using, actually. That's not something I've used very often. A teleseminar is just a conference call.
Yes, it's essentially just a conference call.
Except only one or two people are talking and everybody else is just listening.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that what you do instead of podcasting?
Yeah, well, it was before podcasting.
Uh-huh.
That's what that was before podcasting. The great part is that it's live and it's a great tool to sell something. So you get, you know, 500 people onto a call, and now you have a platform to be able to sell something at the end of your call.
Yep.
And so teleseminars are fantastic for that. They do a great job of, you're able to provide content, but you're also providing a sales message all at the same time. And then you tell people, go visit this website and buy the product by midnight tonight, and you'll get this insanely great discount and offer by doing that. Works immensely well.
Nice. All right. Very cool. Well, let's talk about some of the other stuff too. Okay. Yeah, the stuff that we've already talked about with eBooks also applies in a lot of ways to things like video and audio.
Yes.
Just for example, like I sell videos, I sell training videos. Some of the videos have intros and outros on them. You know, the intro is the animated introduction to the video. And there might be some cool graphics flying around and some pictures and words and some music playing in the background. And one thing that pretty much everybody should know is that I don't make those for me. I outsource those to somebody else. Could I make some of them? Yes. It wouldn't be as good as if I outsourced it because it's not what I do all day long every day. I'm not a motion graphics person. I do other types of things, right?
Right.
So motion graphics is something I can do a little bit. And I've got functional knowledge of how to use motion or something like that. But that's not my specialty. And it might take me 2 or 3 days to make a motion graphics intro for my video where I can have somebody else doing it and they'll have it done in a weekend and I didn't have to spend a minute on it and it might only cost me a few $100s, you know? And that's something I have had a lot of success using Elance for.
Yeah.
Elance is a great, and you know what? If I needed original music composed for me, you know, for our show, for Foolish Adventure, maybe we want to have some music playing in the background when we first start the show or something like that, then I would go to elance.com and have the music. But now, I didn't do that.
I was just like, bow, chicka, bow, bow, now.
Yeah, that's a different video. Okay. A different audio. Well, you know, maybe we should end the show because we're starting to get a little punt. No, I'm just kidding. So, Anytime, I mean, the same way that you use an editor for text, you could also use an editor, an audio engineer for audio. I haven't personally done that. I do some of my own stuff on the audio, although I'm getting to that point now.
We're about to test out somebody right now.
Yeah, I've got somebody coming in actually on Tuesday to come in. He's an audio engineer, a local one, and I'm looking at outsourcing a lot of the audio stuff that I do to him because I honestly now on a weekly basis, I'm spending more time doing audio than I am doing anything else. It's really weird because of all the success of Foolish Adventure and Paperclipping Roundtable and Paperclipping DigiShow. And anyway.
Yeah. And for me, it's kind of frustrating because I try to get a hold of you and you're like, oh, I'm working. I'm like, dude, you're like, let's go have a beer.
Let's go have a beer. And I'm like, I'm working.
Like, no. And so I said, let's find somebody to take over the audio for
so I can go drink beer again. Right. Yeah, it's a real pitiful story, isn't it? So anyway, let's go. Where was I? Oh, what I was saying is that a lot of the same stuff. Now, Tim, you and I were talking about just doing like guerrilla audio and guerrilla video, which is, you know, not focusing so much on the quality of the video and the quality of the audio as much as you focus on the content of it.
Right. The content, not just the content, but the presentation of your personality, really trying to connect with someone that on the other side. Because that's what you're going to need to do. You're going to have to compensate for the lack of polish. You're not going to have the greatest sound. Your lighting is going to suck. You know, all these things are going to be bad, but the content's good, and you're projecting your personality out there, and hopefully connecting with your audience, and then that will overcome a lot of the downside. And the reason I think it's so important is mostly because people are afraid to do it. It's like, just take the action, you know, blunder a few times.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay to fall down, make a fool of yourself. And
you're talking about video now specifically, right?
Specifically with video.
Yeah, video scares people. You know, people get in front of a camera and they freeze up. I mean, nobody in my family does that because I've got cameras everywhere and, you know, we're always using cameras all the time. In fact, in my family, it's a little backwards where people sort of turn on when they get in front of a camera now. You know, their personality really starts to show through. But it's something I hear about over and over again. And I'm telling you, when you first start in front of a camera, it's awkward, it's tough, it's frustrating. You have to do take after take after take. And then, but that's the real secret, is doing take after take after take. That is a serious... Now, if you've been doing video for 2 or 3 years where you're appearing in front of a camera, you don't have to do as many takes anymore. But back when you first start, when you first get started, do a lot of takes. It's okay. Nothing wrong with that. If you have something, if you have a little 2-minute video you want to make, okay, try it. And then if you have to do it again, do it again.
My first experience with trying to record a less than 2-minute pitch for a website, ended up taking me about 45 minutes.
Oh, that's not very long.
And that was no editing. That was just me reshooting over and over.
Yeah, you did
again.
Like 20 takes of it, right?
Oh, it was ridiculous.
Yeah. So, and you know, just a couple tips here on this is that you're the speaker. You need to be authentic. You need to appear and feel authentic to your audience. And a lot of times, authenticity comes with practice. I mean, it's really strange, but you practice being authentic. You know, the first time you do a take, it might be like, okay, I got the information out there, but it didn't really feel right. It didn't feel like me. It felt like I was, you know, like I'm a little robot.
Just, reading it.
I'm just like reading it, which is, by the way, why I personally don't use teleprompters for any of my stuff. If I used a teleprompter, it would speed things up so much. It would speed things up because then all I have to do is read off the teleprompter screen. And I might only have to do one or two takes of something.
And with practice, you will come off as being, you know, natural sounding because you watch the news and that's all they're doing is reading a teleprompter.
But these are people that have been doing it for many, many years. And right. Most folks really struggle with sounding authentic when they're reading a teleprompter. It's something that's very difficult. In fact, even people, the only time I would use a teleprompter is if I'm having somebody else who doesn't even know what they're saying say the message. Like if I hired a promotional model or a speaker, right, somebody like that to be the actual speaker on camera instead of me, then right. I would have them reading a teleprompter because they don't even know what they're talking about. They just got to read the screen.
Right.
But for our audience who are going to hopefully be presenting their own products and their own websites, and I think adding video to your website, even if it's not well lit or the audio isn't perfect, I think it's a great idea because it gives it a chance for your audience to see who you are. And you know what? You don't have to be a physically attractive person. In my opinion, you don't have to be a physically attractive person because the real important thing is just being authentic.
Yeah, as my friend Craig reminds me frequently in text messages that I have a face for audio.
Yeah, he tells you that all the time. Yeah. Well, you know, I wasn't going to bring you up as a specific example of that, Tim. You're not like...
Thanks a lot, Craig.
Yeah. Craig, if you're listening, that was pretty mean. Don't say that. Don't say that to your friend, Tim. He still even called you a friend here on this show. So, but, you know, if for my first... Out of my 173 videos that I've made for Izzy Video as of this recording, I would say for my first 30 or 40 videos, I never even showed my face because I was nervous about that. You know, so I didn't really want to appear in the videos.
Well, and that's a great way to get started is using screen capture software where you just narrate doing something. That's how I got started. You can even use PowerPoint on PC or Keynote on the Mac.
Yeah.
You can create a PowerPoint presentation and then just essentially read it, just deliver it. And a lot of people do that. It's a great way to provide information. Just make sure you change what's on the screen every so often.
So you're not just sitting there looking at the same...
Right, looking at the exact same thing. Yeah. You want to change it about every 10 to 15 seconds because people start looking at other things within that time. So you need to make sure that there's some movement going on, but it's easy to do.
We're going to have somebody ask how to do this and just get the software Camtasia Studio for the PC, or I use ScreenFlow on the Mac. It's just like it sounds, ScreenFlow. And it's like, I don't know, probably $80 or $90 for the software and allows you to record the screen and the audio while you're talking.
Yeah, Camtasia for the PC, they charge a lot more. It's like $300.
I think they have less expensive versions of
now?
It, maybe.
Yeah, because it cost me $300. And
okay.
From the same people, which is TechSmith, who make Camtasia, they have a thing called Jing. And if you want to record screen capture for less than...
What is it, 10 minutes?
It's 5 minutes. So if you can cover a topic in 5 minutes, in some cases, when I'm doing training videos for clients, if it's going to take a while, I just do a whole bunch of short videos, which is great because they're not going to want to pay attention for more than a couple of minutes anyway.
Can you imagine that? You open up at one file and it's an hour-long screen capture?
Right.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, they would. No. My clients would hate that. So I give them these short 3 to 4 minute videos on how to use their website or how to use something. And I just have Jing running on my computer all the time. So anytime I want to do one, I just click on it and I just start recording. It's I love it. It's so simple. There's no real editing, so you just try to do it in one take, and you do it, and then you can hit share, and you're able to get the URL for it, and you email that URL to someone. For me, it's a client. That's how I use it. So I'll email out this URL, and then they can have their staff go watch the video, and now everybody in the company knows how to use this thing.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, the screen capture thing is huge. Also, it's a big business. I mean, I, you know, 50% of my revenue comes from screen capture stuff, at least probably, I would say 50%. I'm just ballparking it there. But we're going to have somebody on soon, Don McAllister, who has the website screencastsonline.com. And he has been for years. I mean, I'll let him tell the story, but the whole story. But my understanding is he started by basically giving friends and family tech support on the Mac when they'd switch to the Mac. They would ask him, how do you use this? How do you use that? And he'd make little screen captures for them. And then he started thinking, you know, I could sell access to this. And he created the whole website. And now he's got, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of people that are subscribers to his member site. And in fact, when you go to the Apple.com website, I think I've mentioned this before, but when you go to the Apple.com website, under resources for people who are just switching to the Mac, his screencastsonline.com is linked by Apple.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he has. I mean, they say, hey, if you're switching to the Mac, you should check out this resource, Screencasts Online. And he's got like this amazing voice. His voice is incredible. And the way that he describes stuff is just really good. And I saw him give this presentation where it was all about how to do good screencasts. And I learned a lot. I mean, frankly, I still think of that stuff when I'm doing my screencasts. I do screencasts. A lot of my revenue comes from screencasts. And I picked up several tips from him. And so he needs to do, you know, I don't think he's done a product yet on how to do good screencasts. He needs to do a product like that.
Yeah.
Maybe
a foolish guide.
A foolish guide to doing screencasts. There you go. Oh my gosh. Did we say that? I'm going to have to edit this part out of the recording. Something tells me that won't actually happen. So that's a great, if you're showing how to stuff that's computer based, that's a great product. You can build products that are just screencasts. And incidentally, you can from Keynote, and I don't use PowerPoint, but I know from, I imagine you probably can because you can do it in Keynote. You can export your slides as individual images and then just import them into iMovie or into Final Cut Express or Final Cut Pro or whatever. You can import them in and then just add voice and have it switch slides every once in a while, and you're good to go.
Another technique, a lot of people don't do this anymore because everybody thinks they have to do it the expensive way, which is to essentially create a stand that has a camera pointing down at your table.
Yeah.
And that if it's not
a computer-based thing,
where it's a actual physical item you need to show, you can have a camera pointing straight down and just do everything underneath it, and you're just narrating as you're doing it. Because, you know, I learned how to do that in high school when I was learning about animation in art class. So it would set up the camera and just take a picture, change the image, take a picture, change the image, and then we'd lace it all together, and then we'd have an animation.
I didn't know you did that. That's cool.
So taking things like that, you can use that same idea. You know, it's a really guerrilla way of getting it accomplished, because it's not like having the fancy equipment where it automatically hooks to your computer and it shows everything and records it on your computer. You have to, you know, record it on your video camera and then port it over to your computer.
Yeah.
But it's what we're really trying to get at here is just getting started. You know, taking whatever you have available for around your house or what you can afford. Like I used to really recommend Flip, you know, the
Flip video cameras,
especially when they went HD. But the biggest problem they had was their audio was crap. Mm-hmm. And then Kodak came out with
the ZI-8,
mm-hmm, which allowed you to plug in. And so it's like, oh, that's great, because you can put a lavalier mic on and then you could record yourself, mm-hmm, or record someone else. Mm-hmm. So and it still costs, and that thing costs the same price as the Flip. And it shot the same quality HD video. So it's like, go with that product because you can get the better audio. I think they finally came out with a Flip that now has an audio
jack. An external audio jack. Okay.
So now you can record better audio. And then it's just a matter of getting in a great spot so your lighting is halfway decent.
Yeah.
And then from there, you can record all sorts of stuff. With a client, I was having such a hard time getting him to sit down and do some video that one day I just showed up at his office, sat down on the other side of his desk, and I held the flip with two hands because my, you know, it started to get shaky after a while. And I just made him talk about the couple of different topics that we needed. And that went on to their company website.
So one of the most portable, best video cameras right now is the iPhone 4. It's got an amazing HD camera in it. And the audio is good. It's really good. You know, the audio that it captures.
Yeah, I've seen some of the stuff coming out, and it's pretty cool. I wish the other manufacturers would come out with something at least halfway as good.
Yeah. So that's a good option now, too. And for the spontaneous video, I mean, I think it's really interesting, you know, behind the scenes video, anything, any kind of work that you're doing, like even as you're just going about your day. You know, there's certain things that you do that's really valuable for other people to see how you're doing it. And so it makes sense just to pull out your video camera and just shoot some video of it. And like even if, for example, let's say that I have a way of going through and putting together a to-do list in the morning, you know, and if I pull out my video camera and talk to it and say, hey, I'm putting together my to-do list. Let me show you my method for doing this. I've sort of optimized this, I guess, over the years. That is something that some people would be very interested in, you know, how to optimize their to-do list. That was the first thing that came to my mind. I'm not saying that that's what you should go out and sell, but you get the point is that as you're going about your day anyway, you're doing stuff that other people would want to know how to do. Document that, capture it, and you can sell that information.
Yes.
What were you going to say?
Oh, just that with that same idea, this guy, Jay Abraham, I learned a lot from his information products. One of the things that he talked about was your company that you're working for may not value everything that you know, even though they've already paid to train you, you've been in the field for a long time, you know your job inside and out. But they won't give you a pay raise or whatever. It's like, but there's probably 10 other companies out there that would love to have access to your knowledge.
Be careful.
So you could take, you know, without stealing company information,
just take
your knowledge on how to do whatever it is that you do and repackage that and then provide it either A, through hours, by giving, you know, one company some of your time and another company. And in each of those cases, you could end up making 3-4 times what you make at your current company by working just a few hours for each of these 10 other companies. And or you provide them an information product that shows how to do this. There's this guy, I can't think of his website, but he was an investment banker. And lots of people wanting to get into that world, like all these people go to these Ivy League B schools, you know, business schools, and they're the career path is to become an investment banker, work 90 hours a week for 10 years, retire by the time you're 34 as a multimillionaire, and that's your, you know, career path. So they were trying to figure out how to become an investment banker, and so he started teaching people how to become an investment banker and built his whole website around that. And he did it as like the, I don't think he gave himself a pen name. It was something else, like, you know, the mystery investment banker or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And he gave insider knowledge on what it's like to be an investment banker, how to become an investment banker. And so he just repackaged his knowledge.
Yeah.
You know,
that's exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, I think it's funny because I have some, you know, it's funny where people will ask me, you know, what should I make my product about? And meanwhile, I'm thinking, well, you work in debt collections. You're a debt collector. That's what you do for 50, 60 hours a day or a week, 50 or 60 hours a day. I mean, it may seem like that, but 50 or 60 hours a week. And you're really good at that. And I'm sure there's other folks that would pay for training on how to be a debt collector. You know, It may not be what they love to do because that's what they want to get rid of. But I'm just saying that for everything that you do, I just read this recently, anything that you do, any product that you create, any service you create, there's always byproducts. And those byproducts can be turned around and sold. Like this company I used to work for made uniforms, and they would, you know, they'd cut out of the fabric. They would cut the panels of fabric that would make a shirt or make pants, but then there would always be these little scraps that they couldn't do anything with. So they would turn around and sell those scraps to automotive companies, which would put it inside of the upholstery in the cars.
Interesting.
So, you know, and then so and then there would be you know, there's always people that would come up and buy the scraps for everything, for every product you make. There's, in fact, I just found out recently, who was it? Was it Ford? I want to say it was Ford that would, as part of their automotive manufacturing thing, they would create lumber, and then the lumber would create these like, anyway, long story short, it would be charcoal briquettes that were the byproduct, and then they would turn around, package them up, and sell them as charcoal.
Yeah.
And now it's like a big, you know, a big business. The point is, I want to quote the source. Tim, you're so good at quoting sources, but my problem is I can't remember where I read this. I read it somewhere where it said like every product, anytime you make a product, there's byproducts. You know what? I think
that's
it was
37
in,
signals.
I think it was 37 signals. Yeah.
Byproducts.
The byproducts rework. That's where I read it.
Well, if you want to get really good, David
Heinemeier Hansen.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's got that gigantic name.
Uh-huh. He works for 37 Signals.
Yes. And he has several talks online where he actually goes into that. Those are really worth watching the interviews. I like those actually over the reading rework because you get to experience their personality and still get the exact same information.
That's awesome. And I have to say that I loved that book. I loved Rework. And it's one of those where it's a great book, and it's kind of, I wish I would have read it back when I worked for corporate America, because it would have applied to me a lot more then, probably at the time.
Well, it probably would have been more frustrating than
it would have been.
You're
right.
I wouldn't have been able
to do anything about any of the things. That's true. That's a good point. All right. Well, I think at this point we should probably go ahead and wrap up. We're at 47 minutes. So, you know, rather than try to think of some awesome sign off, I'll just say that hopefully the information in this episode is helpful too. And if you have requests for more information or requests for us to cover any specific topics, please feel free to call our voicemail number or leave us a comment on the website, send us an email, something. We're always looking for good ideas to spark good conversations that we can record and then release to you. That's it for this week. See you next time.
Enjoy your foolish adventure.
Thanks for listening to Foolish Adventure. If you found this information helpful and want more like it, please visit foolishadventure.com. Do you have specific questions you'd like us to answer? Leave a comment on the website. Who knows? Maybe we'll create a whole show to answer it. Also, we have a voicemail line where you can ask questions. The number is 480-331-4695.